if you meet someone successful, just talk to them about their successes. It's nothing more. People who have been successful at whatever love nothing more than talking about their successes, and there's so much to learn in that. And they can't just come out and start saying, yeah, I was great, and I did this, and I did that. But if you initiate, like, how'd you do that? What did you do? Why'd you do that? What made you think of that? Why'd you put that with that? Why'd you start that business? They'll give you the whole game plan. They'll give you everything. But most people don't want to just come out and tell you, yeah, I'm the greatest, I did this, I did that. But if you, so I always, if the minute I meet someone who's good at something or knows something about something, I don't know, I just ask them a million questions about it, because they'll tell you. Because they love talking about their successes. It's natural. It makes them feel good. It makes them feel good that you're intrigued by something great they did.
Good people, welcome back to RWTW TV from a special remote location this week. We're right outside of Akron, Ohio. Very few people that can get me out of the city and into Akron. The gentleman to my left happens to be one of them. Needs no introduction, and I hate when people say they need no introduction and then they give an introduction, but I'll do it anyway. Man to my left is an entrepreneur, a business manager, a speaker, a public speaker. Trying to talk him into being an author very soon. More importantly, my business partner and good friend, Mr. Maverick Carter.
Thank you.
What's good, brother?
It's good.
How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm great.
Thank you for having us in your humble abode, man.
Thank you.
I haven't really told anyone the story. My first time in Akron, I hit you and I asked, I actually hit your assistant and I asked for hotels. I was like, what are hotels in the area? And she gave my assistant a couple of hotels. I'm like, cool. So the day before I fly in, you're like, hey, where are you staying? Come stay at the house. And I'm like, I already booked the hotel, you know, whatever. And then I got over here and I went to my hotel and it wasn't exactly New York or it wasn't exactly Miami. I was like, from now on, I'm at Casa de Maverick Carter, baby. You know, so
you're
how
always
you been?
Welcome. I've been great.
Been good?
Feeling great. Yeah,
everything good? Good time of year? Exciting
it's
time of year?
It's the best time of year. NBA playoffs coming to a finish, racing to the finish line. Today, obviously. We're doing this. As soon as this is over, I'm going to watch the Clippers and Rockets in game 7. By the time everyone sees this, we'll know who the winner is, but I'm excited to go watch that game and then get ready for the conference finals.
You're on a good run, too, man. Your Buckeyes took it this year. The Cavs making a run.
The Cavs are making a run. Hopefully they can keep it going.
Yep.
It's been a lot of win. You know, we've been winning a little bit.
You came off the Mayweather fight. You went to the Mayweather fight?
I went to the Mayweather fight. Well, of course, I love sporting events. The Mayweather fight was special for me, not because it was a sporting event, but I also took my father.
Ah, that's dope.
It was his 56th birthday on May 2nd, so we went to the Derby and then straight to Vegas from the Derby to watch the fight.
Very dope.
And he told me it was his greatest birthday ever, which made me feel really good.
That made it probably just
special. And I got to see great sporting events, too.
Love it. We were talking, you know, we just had this conversation last week about, and I won't put you on the spot to think of like the top 3 or 5, but you've had a front row seat at some of probably the most iconic sporting events. I think you're too close to it to even realize it. You're probably, I won't say jaded, but it's your business and what you do and whatnot. But I mean, you were there for the D Rose game winner, and then two nights later, you're there for the LeBron game winner. I mean,
yeah, I've seen, you know, it's what I love to do. It's my passion, is going to sporting events, seeing athletes perform at the highest level. And I think, you know, as I told someone, the Mayweather Pacquiao fight, people were disappointed. Pissed because they wanted to see, you know, blood and fights and knockouts. And I said, well, I really appreciate Floyd Mayweather's genius. Like, I think I watch him fight and go, his level of discipline.
Absolutely.
I admire that. The way that he can actually be in a ring and fight someone and never lose control, keep his composure, stick to his game plan and win fights. It may not be the most exciting fight to watch, but to me, I admire that level of discipline.
Well, that's one thing we always, you know, we have in common amongst other things, but like our love for boxing. You know, I think, you know, one of the things I go to is, you know, just the margin of error in boxing. I mean,
it's a different thing. It's not like football. You make a mistake in football, it's an interception. You make a mistake in basketball, it's a turnover.
Yep.
You make a mistake in boxing, it's the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, or worse, right?
Or worse,
And then you go a step further. It's like, football, you lose a game.
Yeah.
You come back and still win a championship. Basketball, you can lose 25, 30 games and come back and win a championship. boxing, that margin of error, to be, you know, and, you know, the boxing pundits will be like, he's not the greatest, Ali, and all that stuff, to be undefeated in any sport, you know, where it's on you, and you can have the greatest team and all that, but when you're in the ring, it's him, you know? So I just appreciate that, the science of it, you know?
100%. Like, so I go to sporting events and admire athletes in a different way. I don't just watch it like, oh, he can jump really high, or he's really strong, or she can hit the ball like this. I watch for, like, the level of discipline, the level of thinking they put into the sport, the level of all of those other intangibles that go into making a great athlete that I think some people don't admire enough sometimes. And they don't, maybe because they don't understand it or they don't think it through, but, like, what athletes do to watch, you know, an athlete really pick apart a defense, a quarterback, or a boxer to stay disciplined and stick to the, like, that level of discipline and thought and thinking through and building a game plan is what I admire the most.
It's funny you say that. Like, I think that's one of the things people don't really, to your point, admire or even look at or think. I mean, everyone thinks, oh, it's great dunk or he can shoot. One of the things I admire about LeBron is his IQ and just how much he knows basketball. Like, he could tell you who the ninth man on any bench in the NBA is and what are his strengths, his weaknesses. I mean, his mind.
Yeah, I tell people, if I get in this conversation, I tell people all the time, LeBron's as big as he is, as strong as he is, as fast as he is, as skilled as a basketball player he is, as talented as he is, his best attribute by far is his brain.
That's crazy.
He's just the level of thought that goes into the game, the level of thinking it through, knowing his teammates, knowing what's going on with his teammates, knowing the other team. The only problem is, it's like, I always tell people, it's like, I grew up an X-Men fan, and it's like, when you have a superpower as a young child, you have to learn how to manage it. Like Cyclops when Dr. X first met him, he's just like shooting beams out of his eyes everywhere. Every time he opened his eyes, just beams went out, and he's like, but then he gave him the glasses where he can control it. Mm-hmm. He can have a laser focus on it. LeBron early in his career sometimes would overthink, and overthinking and not relying on his instincts. So it was like a superpower that he had to learn how to control it and use it the way he wanted to use it.
Yeah, totally. It's one of those things, like I said, I try to see the game as you do, where it's like, I don't look at the whole room. I look at, you know how hard it is to hit a baseball?
Yes.
You know, a pitcher's throwing one of six different pitches in his arsenal from 60 feet or 90 feet, whatever it is, 98 miles an hour, and you got to be able to time that and guess. And I think, we can look this up, but I think they say your reaction time is like half a second before, like once it's released from his hand, for you to decide, am I going to swing, am I not going to swing? Just the mental aspect of what makes these athletes, you know, great. And if you've played any sport or performed or done anything, it's like there's good and then there's just,
of course, you there's, know, there's the that tier of like the greatest we've ever seen.
Across all sports, you know, across quarterbacks, being able to read a defense and say, hey, this is going to happen here.
And lifting weights and running and getting big muscles and getting in great shape won't get you there.
Absolutely.
It's part of it, but there's a thought and a brain and knowing and understanding that puts you there.
Absolutely. So let's back up. Let's go to the beginning somewhat. Maverick Carter, born and raised in Akron?
Born and raised in Akron.
Born and raised in
North
Akron.
North side of Akron.
So for those people that don't know or only know Akron because of LeBron, Akron, where exactly is it? What's it known for? Give us a little.
Akron is a city about 30 miles south of Cleveland. So it's kind of always been the little brother to Cleveland's big brother. Because Cleveland's obviously a big metro area that everyone knows. Akron's kind of the place that some people know. Known, built, a city built on the rubber plants. It was like, there's some stat that I think it was in the 50s or 60s, out of 100 tires around the world, I'm talking cars, airplanes, wagons, any type of tire on Hot Wheels cars, if it was made out of rubber, 97 of them were made in Akron. Because all the companies, so they call it the Rubber City, a city built on that, you know, but not a big city, and not a town, but like a big town, almost like a little small city. I loved growing up here, learned a lot, spent a lot of time, you know, in the inner city. Learned a lot, grew up fast. you had to learn, but a cool city, a very cool city.
It's funny, you know, you just mentioned Akron's a small city, right, by population, but I always give you guys a hard time because we can't have a conversation without you guys being like, you know, this person was from Ohio, this person was from, you know, what is it about the state of Ohio, man? I used to work at Nike, as people know, and we were working on an all-star story around LeBron, right, and around All-Star. We were talking about astronauts or whatnot, and it came up just in research that Ohio has sent the most astronauts to the moon. And, you know, I just heard a stat. It's either Wendy's or McDonald's. You guys have the most franchisee owners, like, in Ohio. And, you know, you coming out of Ohio, LeBron, you know, it's just for being, you know, not a major city or state, I should say, not being a New York, not being a, you know, California, like, what is it about Ohio people, Akron people, Cleveland people, you know?
I think it's...
You guys have had a very high level of success, like, from artists, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I think it would go to probably a little bit around the Midwest, too, that attitude, but for sure in Ohio, it's like, it's that thing that you just said, like, that feeling of, like, oh, you're from Ohio? Where's that? What's out there? From the people in what I call the smile states, you know, the California, Texas, Florida, New York, totally. The states that kind of make this, it's like, it's always feeling, no matter what a person from Ohio does, I think we always have that feeling we got to do more because they don't believe us yet.
It's a little bit of a chip on the shoulder.
It's a chip. It's not a little bit. It's a real chip. It's like, I'm going to show you. And I think, you know, if you meet anyone from Ohio, they kind of live and breathe that. You know, people in Chicago have it a bit, but they're a big city. Like, mm-hmm. they get, you know, Chicago gets respect from everyone. But, you know, from Ohio, we have some cities around Ohio, a lot of metro areas. I think we have maybe the third most metro areas behind California and Texas. But we live with that chip that, like, oh, people always try and shit on us. They don't believe us. We got to keep just knocking at the door until it falls off the hinges. Then when it falls off, we're like, put it back up. We want to do it again.
Well, clearly the chips worked from business to athletics, so keep the chip. Maverick Carter at 10 years old. What was that like?
Oh, man, let me think. 10.
You were a knucklehead running around, just terrorizing shit. Were you?
I always remember things by grade. So 10, you put you in the fifth grade.
Yep. Fifth grade. Give me 10 to 13. Give me a range. Of 10 to 13, what was Maverick Carter like? What were you up to?
I went to school from kindergarten through fifth at one school.
Okay.
And the school happened to be not many black kids there. Okay. I was the only black kid. And then in sixth grade, we moved and I transferred. I went to a school that was probably 60-40 black. So it was my first time. I was born and raised and lived in a neighborhood that was all black, but my schooling was different. So I had this very two different worlds. And I actually didn't know what it was like to go to school with all black kids until the sixth grade. But then in the fifth grade, I did turn into a knucklehead, to be honest with you. My dad went to jail and it was just me and my mom. And I was like, I felt like, I don't know if it was like a feeling or just something like, oh, I'm gonna try and grow up now. My dad's gone. I'm gonna try and grow up. And you know, when you're 11, 12, 13, that means doing stupid shit.
Right, right.
Doesn't mean actually doing anything right. That's growing
nothing
up.
Positive.
It just means doing stupid shit like, you know, hanging out a little bit longer, gambling, whatever the stupid thing is that you think means you're becoming older. I wanna get my own money and buy my own things and so, do silly
so
shit.
So true, yep.
So that was me at that point. But I got through it. I wasn't doing great at school, honestly, because to me that was kind of for kids and I wanted to grow up now. And started, you know, doing things I shouldn't do. But I got through it, learned a lot of lessons through it. Luckily came out unscathed. And then my dad came back a couple years after that.
Got when your I was shit
like 16,
then.
I got my shit together. Yeah. Exactly.
Just in time, absolutely.
Exactly.
So now Maverick Carter in high school.
High school, I was very focused on playing basketball. Okay. I loved to play basketball. I also entered into a new experience, went to high school, to a Catholic high school.
Okay.
So it was my first time interacting or going to Catholic church. Cool. I had grown up going to church, not every Sunday, but we went in like a Baptist church. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in a Catholic church, which is different. And so my first experience with that dress code at school. So I was going through all those changes, but I was extremely focused on being a great basketball player. I wanted to be, you know, like any other city, Akron's a city with pretty good high school basketball. And, you know, that's your first chance at, like, when you're younger, you could be a good basketball player and people know you. But, like, when you hit high school, like, it's in the paper. People know you. You get a chance to be known and be a star. So, like, in your own head or in your city.
That's your sports center.
Yeah,
that's
so I was focused on that. I wanted to be in the paper. I wanted to be talked about. I wanted to be on a winning team. I had a dream of playing in Columbus at Ohio State for the state tournament. I wanted that so bad. I had went and watched 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade. Wow. I would go down, me and my friend, just hang out for the whole weekend. We'd scalp tickets, we'd do whatever, try and make a little money and watch all the best teams. That was our like thing. We'd like, if I just sit 40 rows up, I just wanted to see the best teams. And I had a dream of one day playing on that court. So when I got to high school, I was very focused on that. I knew I wanted to go to college. I wanted to play college basketball. I loved college hoops, probably more than the pros in high school. So I was focused on being a great basketball player, but in my mind, I knew in order to play college basketball, I had to be a pretty good student. So I honestly had the ability to be a really good student, but I did just enough to make sure I could get a Division I scholarship.
Absolutely. And then, so you go away to college.
Went away to college. So I went to Western Michigan, went away,
played. What was that? Is that the first time you're out of Akron for an extended time?
Or, yes, you know, like, I had been
all that much.
Yeah, I had traveled
to play
a little bit.
And that type of stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I had spent like a summer with some family friends in Detroit one time. But this is my first time
extended,
like
on your own too.
I'm on my own.
Right. What was that like? Did you lose your mind?
I didn't lose my mind. I went there like I want to be here. I want to do good.
Okay.
I want to see what it's like. I knew what the college life was
Eastern
like.
Eastern Michigan?
Western.
Where'd Boykins go? He went to Eastern?
Earl Boykins went to Eastern.
He was a monster.
He was a monster.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So I went to Western, which is on the west side of the state, obviously the name. Almost to Chicago, really. It's like an hour and a half from Chicago and like 2 hours from Detroit. So I went there and wanted to be good, wanted to, like, you know, I was like, I'm in college now, like, I gotta grow up a bit and do some, and become a man, and like, but I was focused on hoops. I wanted to be a good basketball player. I wanted to be a part of a team, again, the same thing. Still having it, by that time I had like, I still had it in my head, like maybe I could play for money, like mm-hmm. I could play basketball for money. And I wanted to give that a shot. I was focused on that. But I had definitely started thinking about, if I don't do that, what do I do? And I honestly wanted to be an athletic trainer. Like I had a friend who I played AAU with in middle school in the 7th grade, and his dad was the athletic trainer for the Indians.
Oh, wow.
So we went to a game with him once, and he was like the guy who taped the ankles, stretched the guys out, you know, got the guys ready to go out. And when I saw that, I was like, that's exactly what I wanted.
And I think that's such a powerful thing for kids to see. You know, we talk about this all the time. You don't got to shoot a jump shot. You don't got to, you know, catch touchdowns. You don't got to hit home runs. And you can still be an integral part of, like, the sports business and world, right? So seeing that and it opening your mind to, hey, you know what? Like, there could be other options out there.
Yeah, 100%. And the sports business is a tough business to get into. But there are other things besides the players. There's a zillion things that go on. You know, the game's only, as I tell people, or sporting events. You go to a sporting event, those sporting events, what is it, 3 hours at the longest? Some are shorter. Yep. But there's all these other things that go on around them, the days leading up, the weeks leading up, the months leading up, the hour leading up, the 10 minutes leading up, and why the sporting event's going on. That's besides what you're seeing as the athletes, for sure.
And I think it's dope. At what age would you say, so you're in college, freshman, sophomore, at what age are you thinking, you know what, if this doesn't work out, or maybe it won't work out how I want it to work out, let me start thinking beyond this? Because I just think, and I'll tell you why as you think of your answer, we just see this every day where guys, and you don't want to kill a dream, you want guys to shoot for their dream, you know, and they exhaust it, and they've done it so much, and then now it's time to get a real job, and they don't really have any experience, any of the qualifications. So it's always, I think there's a lot of people out there, young ball players, struggling with that, where it's like, You know, at what age did you at least start thinking?
I mean, you gotta like, it's very hard for people, even me, to like really get that sense of reality. But I think, you know, growing up, I lived in Ohio, I watched Ohio State, but I also watched, I loved Allen Iverson at Georgetown. I loved watching those days in the Big East with AI and Kerry Kittles and Ray Allen. I dreamed of like playing on Big Monday in the Big East. I went to any of those schools. Or obviously I grew up in the Big Ten country, so I watched the Fab Five, I watched Pac-10. I watched all college football and basketball, and I dreamed of playing in that. And then when I was a senior, like, the reality set in, like, I'm not gonna play high major basketball. So the minute that reality sets in, like, I'm a mid-major player, that's what I was. I was like, so I went to play in the MAC, is like, then you, I started to think like, shit, if I can't play high major, I probably can't play in the NBA. Like, that's reality. Like,
right, right.
Like, if Connecticut, Ohio State, Florida, UCLA ain't knocking down my door.
Right.
And not to say that, because there's definitely kids who come from mid-major, but that was my reality.
Got
like,
you.
I knew I wasn't the greatest athlete. I couldn't jump super high. But, you know, I knew the game. I knew what I could do to contribute to the team to win. I played my role, and that's how I got into college, because that's what I did. And so at, like, my senior year, I was like, you know, when I was a sophomore in high school, if you asked me, do I think I got a shot to play in the NBA, I'd probably tell you, yeah.
Absolutely.
By the time I was a senior, it was like, oh, shit, I'm going to play mid-major. Like, fine, great, but I probably ain't going to play in the NBA right. either. Like, very few kids, the merit, like.
But even that, right, even the mentality during that time, you're at least thinking, you know what, I'm going to get a ride, I'm going to get a scholarship, it's going to pay for school, and you're at least thinking of what's plan B, which is creeping up on A very quickly. You know, I think a lot of kids will go and they'll take the scholarship and try to make it work and figure it out. And again, listen, go for your dreams, do all that good stuff, but I think it's dope to hear you say, you know, even that early in your career, your senior year in high school, you're already thinking, you know what, this if this doesn't work out the way I wanted to, what a kind of other opportunities. So that takes us to you, you know, your internship, which a lot of people would die for. You interned at Nike.
Yep.
What was that like?
It was like, you know, it's the only internship I did. So my guess is like any other internship, except for, to me, my biased opinion, it's for the greatest branding, marketing and branding company in the world. There's others who would argue, but I just, you know, I grew up a Nike fan my whole life.
So you tell people, where'd you graduate from?
When people ask me what college I graduated from Nike. So it was like, you know, I'm sure like any other internship, it was another new experience. I moved to Beaverton for that 3 months. And, you know, I did everything from carry gym bags and get coffee to be in the draft meetings, talking about the athletes that Nike liked coming up for the NBA draft. But what I did was I was very focused on, I think, you know, for people who are watching who do internships or want, I was very focused on not what I wanted to do, but what I could do that Nike and what the department I was working in, sports marketing for basketball, saw as value. You have to figure out where the value is, what they see as value. You can't just walk into a place I couldn't and go, well, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm good at.
That's what well, I do well.
They right. may go, you know, like, okay, that's fine, but we don't need you to do that. We don't need that. That doesn't drive any value. So I need to figure out to them what drove value, what really helped move the needle, what really helped. I had to figure, that's what you have to watch for. And the way you learn that is listening to conversations, seeing what their folk, what they're spending dollars against, what's their man hours against. And then you figure out, okay, those are the things I need to learn how to do. May not be what you want to do, but you need to learn how to do those things.
But even knowing that, right? Again, it's like one of those, like just being realistic with yourself, right? And saying, you know what? Here's, because I think when you do that, you give yourself an honest assessment of what you're good at, like you just said, and then you can figure out where you can add value.
Yeah.
You know, so I do this well, this is what the job is, and there's an opportunity here, this is my sweet spot, there's where I'm gonna go and show value. So you worked very closely with someone that's played a huge role in both of our lives and professional careers, Mr. Lynn Merritt.
Yep.
You got to give a Lynn Merritt story. You got to. What's your favorite Lynn story? I'm putting you on the spot. Knowing that he's gonna watch this.
Let me think of the one I'm gonna pick. Well, Lynn.
So for those of you that don't know, as you're thinking, Lynn is the VP of Nike sports marketing for basketball. I mean, we call him the general for a reason. I mean, he's the guy. In my opinion, he's one of the, if not the most brilliant sports marketing mind. Like, he's a legend. If you don't know him, Google him. What's up, General?
Probably just like the fact that Lynn really helped me get disciplined and figure it out. And the way he did is he made me literally call him every single day, like even weekends, and just check in, even if there was nothing to check in about.
So give me an example. It's right now. It's Sunday.
It's Saturday afternoon. And like nothing is going on. Like right. There's no news to update. There's no work being done. So just, I'm like, so what do you want to just me to just call you and we just like sit there and breathe on the phone? Like, but he's like, no, you got to call every single day. I need to know where you are, what's going on, and what are you doing tomorrow. Every single day.
So you would call him, and if there's nothing to report, I'm just calling you.
I'm at home in Akron, sitting in my basement. Tomorrow, I'm going to fly to Indianapolis and meet you there. He would want to know, okay, thanks.
And that was it? That was the extent of the call?
That was the extent. Every single day, there had to be something to talk about. But it's a good rule because it forced communication, it forces discipline, and it forces you to, like, talk.
Yep, and even accountability, right? It's like it's bigger than you. It's not just I do this well, and when I work, when I feel like working, I'll do great work, and when I'm on my time.
Exactly.
It definitely sets you up. So, one thing we didn't talk about is you played high school ball with LeBron.
Yep.
Right? But you guys go back way before
even high school. I played 1 year of high school with him. Yep. Because I'm older, so when he was a freshman, I was a senior.
Did you know back then that the kid was special?
When he was a freshman?
Yeah.
Absolutely. By the time he was a freshman in high school, you didn't know how great he could be, but you definitely knew he was, I mean, he was great. I mean, our team went 27-0. He was the leading scorer. Though I was a senior, he averaged 19, I averaged 17. We had another kid averaged 16. But you knew he was special because the other thing you knew is, more than anything, he wanted to be a part of a team and he wanted to be a winner. And he would do, it wasn't about him. It's never, ever been about him. And I think that's smart, right? Because he knows he needs teammates to win. He knows he needs people around him to win. He wants to be a part of a winner. But obviously, he's the best player. So he doesn't have to make it about him. The world will make it about him because he's the best player. So if you're the CEO of a company and the company does great, you're going to get the credit. You're the person, you're the woman or the man leading the thing. You don't have to like go out and seek news and get it. If it works, you're going to get the credit. So he's the best player. So if the team does good, obviously he has to do great for us, the team to be good. So he got that really early. And I think he still, that's his mindset still.
And it seems like a simple thing, but there's a lot of great athletes that don't have that mentality, right?
A lot.
And then, so at this point, when you know he's special, you think he's got a shot, like, to go all the way, to go to the league, like, at this freshman year in high school?
Freshman year in high school, it was like, he wasn't big by then. He was a skinny guy. He was a shooter. He shot a lot of threes, and he ran the floor really well. But you knew, like, this guy's definitely an NBA talent. It was just a matter of when. Does he play college for 2 years? But he's definitely going to play in the NBA. You knew that. By the end of his freshman year, it was a foregone conclusion. He was an NBA player. It was just how soon. And then when he grew, it was like, oh, he's never going to play college.
Mm. Okay. So talk us through, you finish your internship at Nike. LeBron declares... You know, when did you start managing LeBron? As most people know, you managed LeBron.
After his second season, he fired his agent and said, he called me one day and said, this is what I'm doing. And I want you to help me put together a business. Neither one of us knew what the hell that meant.
How old are you at this point when you got this phone call?
I was 23.
Oh, wow.
I was 23, so long time ago now. And neither one of us knew, but I knew again, because he and I have a bit of the same mindset and approach things the same way. It's like, you have to surround yourself with great people. So that was the first thing, like, okay, let's surround ourselves with great people, and then we'll figure it out as we go. Be smart, listen, and, you know, try and be not be ambitious without being overly ambitious, and make sure we have the smart people, make sure we're listening to those folks. And so the hardest part, I think, was like going through and picking and putting together the right team at the beginning. And then, because listening to them, once you have the right team in place, it becomes a bit easier, but putting those people in place was tougher.
I read an article or an interview you did a while back, and they asked you if you felt you were ready, if you personally felt you were ready at the time, and you were like, hell no, you know, and you're like, but I surrounded myself with the right people, and I think you were like saying that even to this day, you couldn't do it by yourself, right?
No.
It's not something you can
even
do.
Even to this day, being seasoned and being around it, no, and you can't ever know when you're ready for something. It's like, are you ready for this? I don't know. But you just got to throw yourself at it if that's what you want to do. But you got to have, in a lot of instances, a good support system.
Yeah. I have this belief, I think, in you know, you being an entrepreneur. And when I called, so let me take it back. When I called my mom, when I got the news that my son Jordan was being born, you know, I, first phone call you make, I called my mom and I was like, y'all, like, I'm going to be a father. And she was like, oh, my God, that's so great, you know. And she was like, what's wrong, son? And I was like, well, nothing's wrong. I'm happy. She's like, I can hear in your voice. And I was like, Mom, I don't know if I'm ready. And she's like, you'll never be ready, son. You know, and I think it's one of those, like, you'll always wish you had a little more school maybe, or a little more money, or a little more experience. You'll never really be ready for it. But if you're passionate about it, you know, if you're going to go hard at it and give it an honest run and an open mind where you're going to surround yourself with people, you know, the right people, I think that's kind of just a mindset that you think a lot of people have. But
and it's like, and you have to be very, I think, you know, when I talk to people younger than me, I always tell them, like, be super curious. Like, if you, I always tell people very simply, younger people than me, if you meet someone successful, just talk to them about their successes. It's nothing more, people who have been successful at whatever love nothing more than talking about their successes, and there's so much to learn in that. And they can't just come out and start saying, yeah, I was great, and I did this, and I did that. But if you initiate, like, how'd you do that? What did you do? Why'd you do that? What made you think of that? Why'd you put that with that? Why'd you start that business? They'll give you the whole game plan. They'll give you everything. But they, most people don't want to just come out and tell you, yeah, I'm the greatest, I did this, I did that. But if you, so if the minute I meet someone who's good at something or knows something about something I don't know, I just ask them a million questions about it, because they'll tell you. Because they love talking about their successes. It's natural. It makes them feel good. It makes them feel good that you're intrigued by something great they did. Everybody wants people to be intrigued by something great.
Absolutely. And I can attest to that. I mean, we've been in meetings, in business meetings, you and I, with, you know, uber successful people, wealthy people, you know, famous people, whatnot, and you're never ashamed to ask a question.
Never.
Whether it's, how'd you do that, or what was your thought process, or even, I don't understand what that means. Like, what is that? Like, what are you, you know, and I've always admired that about you, where it's like, you're never,
you have to be curious.
You ask questions.
There's a famous quote by Albert Einstein, who most of us, you know, is the kind of a symbol of genius. This, you know, most people say the smart, would think the smartest person's ever walked the earth. And his quote is, I have no special talent, I'm just passionately curious. And I love that. It's just like, I'm just curious, I wanna know, I wanna understand. Because especially when you learn something, because here's what happens. I could learn something from you today. You could tell me something you did, like, PR, why'd you do this? You're like, oh, I did this because of this and this. And then I could go to the next conversation tomorrow and regurgitate with my spin on what I learned from you, and people go, wow, that Maverick's really smart. Wow, how do you think he knew that?
Absolutely.
Like, it didn't just pop into my head. You have to learn. You have to be curious and gather information and know things. And I'll learn something from you and take it and apply it to my life and put my spin on how I feel about it. And then people go, oh, wow, he's really smart. But I just learned it from you.
Absolutely. Well, another thing I've noticed you do also is you are not afraid to step out of your box. You have friends that from all different walks, all different businesses, all different types of people, whether they're in the hood, the ballroom, a CEO, wealthy, dead broke. You've always surrounded yourself with a very eclectic mix of people. Why do you think?
Because exactly what I just said, because if you just hang with one style or one type or one group of people from one place, you can only learn what that group knows. And that, I think people make that mistake a lot. You have to open up and learn, because there's so much to learn from everybody, anybody, like people from this city, that city, big cities, small cities, little towns, people who built big businesses, small businesses, people who failed in business, people who were uber successful at business, people who are from the hood, who've been to the high, like, I talk to all of those people and I want to understand certain things about their life or what they did or why they didn't do that or history or why they think that happened and get their perspective so I can, I'm just curious, I want to know. So, and I think, you know, and you saying that makes me think about that. I do, I have people in my life that are like, run the whole gamut. And for years, I've known people, some people for 10, 15 years that come back around to your life like in a full circle. So it's just like, I'm just curious. I always want to know what they do. Why'd you do that? And I think there's so much, I think, you know, you can read books, you can, but the best way to get knowledge is just having conversation with people. Just purely.
It's funny to me because, you know, I can talk to you and you'll be like, oh, I had a meeting with X starting quarterback in the NFL or this businessman or this CEO. And then I'll see you with someone and be like, who's that? And you're like, oh, that's just my homeboy from Akron. Like, you know, like, so
yeah,
you run the gamut and it's kind of like, and I think, you know, to your point, that's one of the things where it's the more people you can surround yourself, which I tell people all the time, I said, you know, no knock on school, no knock on formal education, higher education. I've learned 10X in life and experience and interacting with people than I have at school through formal education. So I totally agree with you in that in terms of just surrounding yourself with, you know, other people and their successes become your 100%. Successes, their education becomes your education.
And I think, you know, people don't take enough advantage of, like, if you're around someone, really take advantage and learn from them and, like, and they could be from any walk of life, really dig in and ask them questions and get that knowledge from them of whatever they know. It might be a guy who just knows one thing, just one thing. Learn that from that person or that woman, just like, because that's the best way to learn is from each other, to me.
Agree. You know, one of the things that I think sets you apart and your career apart from a lot of people is, you know, even when I introduced you, it's not one thing. It would have been very easy for you to say, I manage LeBron, right? And I've made money and I'm cool and let's ride this thing till the wheels fall off. You know, at what point in your career did you even start thinking beyond that? Like, hey, there's opportunities to start other businesses. Or was it your curiosity? What? Because most 23, 24, 25-year-olds aren't thinking like that.
Yeah, it was a little bit of like my curiosity and seeing what else was going on. It was also the people around me helping me to, like, if I had an idea or I had an ambition or I saw value that we weren't capturing being who LeBron was, it was like I always wanted to figure out how do we capture as much value as we can. Those people really helping me and steering me and guiding me, and now that's stupid. That's actually pretty smart, but it'd be hard. Like, so I would say probably another 2 years into setting LeBron's team up the right way that needed help. Once we got that in place, it was like, okay, what else is out there for us to do? Obviously, we're going to do the marketing deals and the partnerships, but what else is there out there for us to do? And that's when we started thinking, like, oh, wow, we should start owning things. We did this deal for Cannondale Bikes and, like, started to figure out, like, okay, let's see if we can own a couple things. Because my curiosity led me to believe, and LeBron to get very quickly, like, okay, in business, if you drive value, you want to own that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, you know, athletes drive value and get paid a lot of money to do it, but they don't necessarily own the team. They can't, or own the league. But so in other places that we were driving value or that we could, can we own some things? That's where that thought came from.
And it's funny, man, like, you know, we were in a meeting, and I won't say the name of the meeting, but we were in a meeting, and I think, you know, a lot of what you're saying is, you don't know what you don't know. So the more you're exposed to, the more it just opens your mind to even the opportunities out there.
Yes.
You know, we were in a meeting, we won't talk specifics, but, you know, the average person would think, you know, the holy grail for a person like me would be to own a team. Oh, I'd love to own the Knicks or the Cavs or the Giants or whatever the case may be. And we had a meeting and someone was like, why aren't you thinking about owning a sport? And yeah. It just blew my mind that it was like, that's not even, I didn't even think you could even think like that, right? Yeah. But again, it's being in a meeting with people that I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be the smartest person. I want to be in a room with someone's super intelligent and is the best in class at what they're doing. And it's kind of that. It's kind of like you said, it opens your mind to other things. And it's like, okay, then you go within your circle and it's like, well, I want to do this. Don't know how, but I know math can probably help me or at least point me in the right direction. So that's always a big one for me. One thing you mentioned was you were able to do a lot of this other stuff, you know, to chase a lot of these other interests once you got LeBron's team together. I'd be remiss not to talk a little bit about Rich and Randy and how that, you know, how you guys came together at an early age, kind of, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, we were the ones putting the team together with LeBron, and obviously those guys, we've all grown and grown into roles that work best for LeBron and for all of our business interests. But I think the key to it is, as we were talking earlier, going back to like playing basketball, we all understand and accept in order for the team, everyone to win, and then, you know, whatever comes with that, we all had a role to do. We had to stick to that role and we had to master that role. So Rich is now, you know, one of the best basketball agents out there doing it, representing NBA players. And Randy's job is taking care of LeBron and being his everything from his assistant to his bodyguard to helping me with marketing ideas to getting everything, just like getting things done, is he just mastered that role. And we always held ourselves to a higher standard of professionalism, of courtesy, of attention to detail. And, you know, we've always practiced those things and we keep them going now, even as we've all gotten older and have families and still work together. And so it's been great. And that all came together from many, many conversations and thinking it through and watching other people and learning from other people and seeing other athletes with their people around them and other, you know, businessmen with their people around them and how it all worked. And like you see what leads to the ones that are very successful, and you see the ones that lead to the ones that are not. Okay.
I think to me, one of the proudest things of me, even before we knew each other, was from the outside looking at it. It would have been very easy, and we see it every day, right? We don't need to say names. It would have been very easy to be the entourage, right? Like your friend, your childhood friend, he's a star. We don't really got to do nothing. We're good. We kind of hang around and all that. You guys saw it early on to say, first and foremost, was treat LeBron like a business, right? And I mean that in its purest form in terms of the support around him. And then figuring out, again, who were the best people to kind of play those roles and then becoming experts in them. I think, you know, that's probably the most brilliant thing you guys have done as a unit in terms of, you know, treating it as a business and never getting caught up in that, you know, the limelight of it or wanting the shine.
Yeah, I think, you know, to your point, I think what kept us from doing that was we wanted to build business. Of course, we wanted to make some money. But more than anything, we want and still do, and that's a little bit out of Ohio thing, that Chip, is respect. Like, respect in the form of, like, when I walk into a room, whether it's, you know, CEO of a company, other athletes, business people, like, they respect my ideas. I bring good ideas to the table. If I don't have an idea and someone else has an idea, I can be thoughtful about it and they're gonna respect it. So I think that always drove the mindset of, like, no, we're not gonna just be like an entourage hanging right out and partying, because we want respect. We wanna do great business, we wanna make money, we wanna build, but more than, first and foremost, we want respect in the form of, like, people will listen to us, they will take our call, they will value our ideas, they will pitch us ideas and listen to what we have to say about their ideas. Always wanted that. And I think, you know, we've gotten there and we do get respect, but I think going back to the Ohio thing, bringing the conversation, that we still live with that chip on our shoulder, but like we still got a lot more work to do to get that ultimate level of respect.
You still feel like there's more respect out there to get?
100%. I still feel like I haven't done enough. I need to do it. I need to, like, I haven't done enough. Like, I need business guys to respect me even more, my peers, the people I do business with, the people I look up to, 100%.
Love it, love it. I mean, and then that's, again, it would have been easy just to say, hey, we've made it. You know, you guys have never thought like that. You know, you've always thought, you know, more, smarter, what can we do? And I don't even think you guys realize it, and you won't realize it, and maybe some of our viewers or, you know, the people listening, realize the role you guys played, because it was unheard of back then, right? Now it makes perfect sense, right? Now, you know, hindsight, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Back then, you know, young black kids, early 20s, mid 20s, managing an athlete, managing his business, making decisions together as a unit, no formal training or education. You guys were like the anti-establishment. And if you guys crash and burn, there may not be a lot of opportunities that we see now.
Yeah, I'm
sure. You realize that? You probably don't have time to sit and really think about it, but.
I definitely think about it 100%. I honestly think about it from just not like athlete and management, but just like young people, and specifically because I'm an African-American man, young African-American man. I wish I would sit down and think about it more. I need to, and I always think, like, as I get older, I really need to start focusing on it and thinking about it to what can I do to help more. Obviously, I work a ton now, you know, so I don't spend enough time thinking about it, but I have thought about it. People have told it to me before. I mean, going back to Lynn, he's told me he's had people in his office like, I want to be the next Maverick Carter. Like, so, you know, do I feel like we pioneered something? I think so, yes. I feel like we did something. And I think, you know, that also leads to what we want. We want, like, because you got to remember when we first did this, like you said, like nobody wanted us to do that. Yeah. Nobody thought we would succeed. And, you know, I said it on 60 Minutes. I mean, we were on 60 Minutes years ago, that no one could just come out and say this, but it was like young black guys like doing that. They were just saying, young, how could he hire his friends?
I mean, you guys got killed. Everything but the black word was said, but you guys
every
got
every word but the black word. I said on 60 Minutes, yeah. That's what they really want to say. But like, we definitely, I mean, it was like brutal. It was just like, you know, for no reason either. It was like, but you know, and obviously we've had some failures. But I think overall, you know, we've done pretty well.
I mean, listen, anything great or new or with the lane or potential to be great is normally treated like that in any walk, right? They said Einstein was retarded or something like that the other day, right? So that's kind of dope. So, you know, for me, as I hear your story about, like, you know, not sure what you wanted to do and realizing early basketball wasn't it and kind of moving, and you kind of didn't have, like I always say, you know, a traditional education in the business. You just spoke at Stanford?
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, and did you speak at Harvard as well?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's that like? I mean,
First,
it's got to be an honor when you, how's that even happen? You know, people get a call, like how's that?
Yeah, a professor, either I know them, in the case of Stanford, the gentleman who's a professor at the D School is another young guy, you know, Jason Maiden,
yep.
Who's a designer at Nike. Called me to come be a part of a speaking engagement at the D School, which is the design school at Stanford. And in the Harvard case, they want to do a case study on our business. It's a very cool class there run by this professor named Anita Elbros. So she did a case study, and I go, I've been like 4 or 5 times to teach the case study to the class. You know, it's always like, it's always a thing to your point that's like, it's obviously an honor. It's also one of those things that, it's one of the things that let me know I've kind of validation. Mm-hmm. It's like a validation thing. It's like a respect thing. So it feels really good in that sense of the word. Like, okay, they want, like, that's part of getting that respect. Like, people who are at the highest level of education want me to come and talk about this education that I've gathered from meeting people and traveling around the world and doing business. And then it's always fun because, most importantly, bringing it full circle again, I end up learning the most. Mm. I end up talking to the students or the other people I'm speaking with on a panel or whatever. I always feel like I'm selfish. I feel like I leave learning the most. So I'm always down to do it because, I mean, you're at Stanford, I'm at Harvard, whatever university I'm at, I'm usually on a panel with very smart people from different walks of life, a lawyer or this or that. And then the professor, and then the students, they ask great questions because they're very smart. Obviously, they're smart and they're there to learn. So they ask questions that either force me to think about something or I learn from their questions. So mm-hmm. I think I always leave learning, but I also feel validated that they want me there.
You know, one thing as I think back on your story, it's like the common thread has always been curiosity and never being afraid to work. You know, you said you carried bags and you were an intern. You didn't come in saying, hey, I should get a job at Nike. You know, like, intern and kind of learn the business and not being afraid to bring people around you to help you, you know. Talk about kind of like that mentality, because I think, you know, young people today or people that are trying to get into the industry, they see on Instagram or they see on Twitter, and they may see, like I always say, you've seen the bottles pop, the championship bottles pop, but you don't see the, you know, suicides and the workouts and all that stuff. So talk about that, just kind of the mindset of like the work put into.
That harkens back to, again, like I always, to your point, look to pull threads through my life through a conversation. Like, what I admire about Floyd Mayweather, the discipline. Like, you have to be passionate, and you have to be committed, and you have to have a vision. I always talk about vision, passion, and commitment. You have to have a vision of what you can be, what you're thinking about being, and you have to, my high school football coach used to tell me the night before, on Thursday nights, when you go to bed tonight, dream about, see yourself catching the touchdown. I was a wide receiver. So you have to be able to see your vision and then be passionate about it and then committed to it. And the commitment will force you to work. You won't mind the actual work. You almost get a little upset when the work is over. Like, when you get the accomplishment, it feels really good, but you have to love that process. And the process is the work of getting up, doing it, whatever needs done. And you have to work smart and know what you're working, but you have to be committed and willing and accepting the work with open arms. And if you're not, then good luck. I don't know how you're gonna do it.
It's funny, I've had the pleasure, you know, similar to you, like I say, my education was at Nike. My education was at Beats by Dre, and being around kind of those brilliant minds. And, you know, I did an interview a year or so back, maybe 2 years ago, and they asked me if there was a common thread on, you know, the success that Nike had and the success that Beats had. And I said, look, I said, there is one. It's hard work, right? You know, I look at people like Lynn Merritt, and I don't even want to know what his frequent flyer miles looks like and how much he travels and how hard he busts his ass, even being the guy over there. I look at someone like, you know, Dr. Dre at Beats, and he spends till this day 3 straight days in the studio working on some stuff. He's more than rich, more than wealthy, right? He doesn't need to do that. I look at someone like LeBron, and we've gone on athlete, you know, the global athlete tours with him, and he brings his trainer with him. And he works out every single day, and you land, and it's a 12-hour, you know, 16-hour flight, 12-hour time change. He's just played a long NBA season. It's his off time, and he's in the gym working out in a hot gym somewhere in Asia. Sprints, shots, weights. It's a mentality of it's not even doing it to be successful. It's part of the process, and they enjoy the process. And that's something that, you know, that's the common thread to me. Anyone that I've seen successful in whatever it is, I don't care if you're the most successful sanitation worker, it's that level of work.
Yeah, and I think that comes from the commitment, right? Like, if someone asks me the common thread between any great company or great people I see, is like they pick something and they're committed to it. So if LeBron was committed to making money, then he would stop working because he's made money. But that's not what he's committed to. He's committed to being great, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, basketball player we've ever seen. He's committed to that. That's what he's 10, 12, I don't know how long ago, he decided that's what he was going to commit this part of his life to, these years, and he's not giving up on that commitment. And he's focused on it, and that's what he gives up. Nike is committed to delivering the best athletic apparel and footwear in the world. And they are committed to driving innovation. They are committed to that. So that's what they are committed to. Beats was committed to building the best headphones with studio quality sound, and then building a brand that everyone was very relevant, was very top of culture, and they are absolutely committed to that. And when you meet those people like a LeBron, like a Floyd Mayweather, like Phil Knight when he was leading Nike, or Mark Parker, or Jimmy and Dre, that's all they care about. Like, if you want to talk about something else, it's like, maybe they'll talk to you about it, but they're not. You're not going to get them off that path. And that if that path means if they make LeBron last summer made up his mind that, like, he's going to go 70 days and not eat a carb, like, that's just what he just did it. Like, that would be so hard for me. Like,
and I remember asking him, like, why? He's like, I just something I want
to
do.
He wanted to lose weight. Like, he thought it would be good for him.
Absolutely.
Because he's absolutely committed to being great. And whatever he decides, now granted, a trainer, a basketball, the coach can help him figure out what it takes to get to where he wants to go. But once he decides that's what this is, I got to do this for the next 30 days or this for the next year to be great, that's what he's going to do. And that's the, to me, that's the string, the thread that gets pulled through. Like Phil Knight has a quote that I don't, probably gave it in the 70s or something, never stop hearing the voice of the athletes. Yep. And they build, he was committed when he started the company to building products for the best, it started as just runners, and then it became all athletes. And they are absolutely still committed to that. They still never stop hearing the voice of the athlete. What is the athlete saying? Is the product working for the athlete? And then they build everything else around that, but it starts with that. And if you don't want to talk about that, they don't want to listen to you.
Right. It's funny. I mean, even, you know, you see it till this day, like with the Beats, right, who we have friends at, obviously. And, you know, you've seen the other companies where it's like they'll do a spot or commercial and it's like, here's our product, and then they'll try to do a commercial kind of around it and tell a story around it, and it's like, eh, you get it, it's marketing.
Yep.
And you get someone like Beats that tells an amazing, authentic, timely story that's culturally relevant, top of mind, and then they'll figure out a way to weave their product with it. But it starts with that commitment culture to whatever it is they're really trying to connect on, and they're smart people. They'll figure out a creative way to get the product through it. But it's something as simple as that, you know, it's, you know, I think about it all the time. I think about, you know, the pleasure of the people I've been able to meet with and work with, or even just be in a room and be a fly on the wall. And it's that relentless commitment and that relentless 100%. Work ethic.
And that's what I, going back to the Mayweather, that's what I admire about Floyd Mayweather is like, he's obviously very committed and disciplined to being what he wants to be, which is he wants to be considered the greatest boxer ever. He's always in shape. I don't think the guy has ever taken a drink. I mean, I don't think so. I could be wrong. Yep. Always in shape, always disciplined, always got a game plan, always sticks to the game plan. That's something to admire.
Absolutely. So, present time. Survivor's remorse.
Yep.
How'd it come about? Tell us a little bit about it.
Survivor's remorse, for those that don't know, is a TV show that I executive produced with another stellar team, Mike O'Malley, Time Warner, LeBron, and the great people as stars. Came about, Tom and I, who, for those of you who don't know, is my partner in my original management company, but Tom also was a legendary TV producer, The Cosby Show, Roseanne, That 70s Show, to name a few, called me up and said, you know, he just watched this commercial that we had produced for LeBron and thought it could be a great TV show. And then he and I started going, riffing back and forth on ideas, and I told him about this, I guess you call it this syndrome that I have, it's called survivor's remorse, which is normally for people who survive something tragic, meaning like a boat crash or a plane crash, and the people, a group, some people don't make it, and the people who do make it start to ask God, why them? And I told them I have it a bit about my neighborhood and my family, so it's like I started riffing back and forth about ideas and how that idea, the crux of that idea, has heart. There's funny moments. I was with my family yesterday laughing like crazy. There's sometimes very serious things that happen with family that are, could be seen as tragic, but with family, you end up like, I can't even cry about it, you just laugh about it, it becomes funnier. So the crux of that idea of me having survivor's remorse in my family and my neighbor, and wanting to help everybody that I possibly can, but you just can't.
Right.
Or sometimes asking God, why did you put me in this place? Why not that person or whatever, was the crux of the idea. And we've, you know, going into our second season, producing it right now. In fact, I'm going to Atlanta this week. Worked out perfectly. The Cavs are playing the Hawks, and I get to be on set for a couple days, which would be fun. But we have a great cast. I mean, our showrunner and writer, Mike O'Malley, I've learned, talking about learning and being around someone so smart and so brilliant, just learning, not about just making a great TV show or showrunning, but about life and how to treat people and how to treat staff. I mean, I can't say how great he is and how lucky we are to have him as a showrunner. So season 2 will be coming up in August.
Dope. Congrats on it.
Thank you.
You know, over the show, Spring Hill, talk to us about kind of the thinking of when you wanted to get into that field and kind of what the thought process was.
Yeah, so we originally launched Spring Hill to make one documentary back in 08 called More Than a Game. Time met Jimmy Iovine, he became our co-executive producer. And we were like, we're gonna make this doc. We decided we were gonna do it with Chris Bauman, who's a great director. We said, we might as well form a company that does it, and if it works and it's good, we'll start to build a brand. Then we did Survivors, we did a couple other one-off shows, and I said, you know what? I really love this, I love producing. Being a producer is a bit like being a detective. You kind of, you know where you want to go, you know the crime you want to solve, you know where the murder happened, you know what the weapon was, and then you got to work backwards. So, you know, I love that process. Again, it's one of those things, it's a process that people don't see. Making a TV show, you'll see the world will see the 10 half-hour episodes, but it's such a process, and there's so many people involved, and you know you want to get to 10 great episodes, and then you got to work backwards all the way back to the beginning of, like, we're going to have one great idea and write an episode, have another great idea, write an episode, and then building it up. So we've said that we're really going full steam now in production and building a content company. You know, we have 5 shows that are picked up. Survivors is airing, Becoming is airing. We have a show with Esquire all about going to the biggest and best sporting events in the world. And forget showing the sporting event, but everything that happens around it, the great dinners, the places to go, what are the cool parties, you know, all the behind the house of a sporting event. So it's something I love doing. I enjoy it. LeBron himself, who's obviously my partner, loves acting. He loves, you know, his first movie's coming out this summer called Trainwreck, so he wants to be an actor and act a movie, and he's actually pretty good at it.
Which looks hilarious, by
the
way.
It's I can't tell you how funny it is. I think people will love it. I mean, we've been showing it. Showed it at South By. A couple other people are really responding to it. It's really funny, written by Amy Schumer, directed by Judd Apatow. So he likes that. So those, me liking to produce and him liking to act, is kind of the conversions of Spring Hill and the company we're building.
Haven't had the opportunity to see the extended trailer of his movie. Listen, anything LeBron does, I've learned not to bet against him, right? He's gonna be great at anything. He's gonna work, like we talked about, work and commitment to be great at. I was a little surprised at how good he was in his timing. We talked about, like, an easy thing to act.
To your point, LeBron's committed to working at whatever if he sets out to do something, he's gonna commit to it and work. But it's one thing to be a hard worker, which he is, but you add on the layer of intelligence he has, and his brain works very, very quickly, and his ability to take things in, process them, and then apply them, led him to be, I mean, this first movie, I think people will be pleasantly surprised.
It's going to be good. I can't wait for it to hit theaters. Uninterrupted.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. What is it? The thought process?
Well, it's a digital network that's, you know, built to tell sports stories with athletes sometimes, you know, behind the camera or behind the camera phone telling their own story and controlling their message. And there's a lot of great people out there doing that now, but it's built to do that. And I think it started with LeBron writing his letter to come back to Cleveland and the response that we got from that and how great people responded to that. So it's doing great now, telling 2 great stories now of LeBron and Draymond Green going through this journey of the playoffs and seeing how far both have now advanced to the conference finals. So it's been really fun, and we have a great partner in Bleacher Report and the whole Turner family. It's been great.
What do you, I mean, it's been, you know, when you first told me about it, I was like, it makes perfect sense. And I think, you know, again, you know, proof's in the pudding. Like, you didn't go out and say, hey, we're gonna do this by ourselves and all. You went and got great partners.
Gotta get a great team.
You know, and it works. So, what are you excited about? Just whether it's sport, business, what are you sitting up in your seat for? Like, what are you excited about? What's Maverick Carter excited about now these days?
I'm honestly very excited about the rhythm I found in my work life, meaning I've really been able to find, daily, hourly, minutely, weekly, tweaking my rhythm of my work rhythm of, like, balancing my ambition versus what I have to do today to get there. But I'm excited about the rhythm I've found. I'm very, very, I feel good. A lot of days I'm tired because I'm tirelessly working, but I feel good about the work rhythm that I found. What I'm figuring out too is I think I've done a good job, but I think I could be better at getting my life balance in there too. So it's not just all work. So getting that work-life balance, but I'm excited about the rhythm I found in work. I'm excited about the team that we've expanded the team, as you know, obviously, being an integral part in helping that. The people that are coming on board, the team, I'm excited about that. I'm excited to keep building that. And I'm really excited about the rhythm I found of like knowing, working harder, working smarter, and really driving value for myself, for partners, for others. I'm really excited about that.
Maverick Carter, 20 years from now, we're gonna look into the crystal ball. What's success?
In 20 years?
Like you look back when you look back 20 years from now and say, you know what, I'm very happy about that.
I haven't figured out exactly how I wanna do it, but I know I would like to affect, I would like to have some kind of great effect on, there's a lot of issues in the world. I'm not here to save the world, but the issues that are near and dear to me, which are young people and specifically young African-Americans from a place like that I'm from, kind of figuring it out, not figuring it out in the sense of the world of like, figuring out like what they should and shouldn't be doing, figuring out how to gain knowledge, figuring out all the things that we just talked about. I would really like to affect that in a great way. I don't know how yet. I don't know with who, but I know that would be, if I figured that out, I would be very successful. I would be able to go to sleep at night and feel very good.
Dope. Speaking of young people, you know, I'm sure we'll have, you know, a very good amount, maybe not the majority of people listening or watching, you know, young people that hopefully are trying to learn or you know, want to be entrepreneurs or want to learn how to manage people or want to, you know, learn how to get out there and kind of follow their dreams. What advice, you know, what advice can you give, you know, that 22-year-old, 19-year-old, 18-year-old Maverick Carter that's a senior in high school or freshman in college?
The advice I would give them is be curious, be forever curious. In this day and age, it's so easy. Everybody has a smartphone in their hand, almost everybody. Everybody knows what Google is. Learn, read, study. If you want to be an astronaut, you should be able to tell me who are the five greatest astronauts, where are they from, why were they great? If you want to be an agent for a baseball agent, who are the best baseball agents? Why were they successful? What city did they build their businesses in? And why did they pick those cities? Like, and then when you meet people in and around that world or people who you know are successful or been smart about something, learn from them, or people who have just had more life experiences than you. Be curious, ask them questions until you're blue in the face or they tell you to get the hell out of their face. Just keep learning and getting that knowledge and applying it to whatever you want to do in your life.
It's you know, you mentioned earlier that most people that are very successful love to talk about their successes. I think there hasn't been a successful person that hasn't become successful asking those same questions and whatnot. So, you know, when someone, I've seen you do it, people come and ask you questions, you know, the time you can give and you're sure to answer questions and whatnot. So, you know, you're definitely living what you're speaking. Thank you for being on the show. It was easy,
appreciate
man. I didn't stump you. I didn't anything.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
It.
Maverick Carter, RWTWTV. Thanks for checking in. Peace.